Blogging the Boys presents Cowboys Radio with Rabs and McCool. Here are your hosts, Rabble Rouser and Landon McCool.
Hello, howdy, and welcome to another edition of Blogging the Boys Cowboys Radio Victory Podcast. I am Landon McCool, and with me, as always, is Rabble Rouser. Rabble! I mean, it's like the final drops of water in Oasis. It's like I thought I was just going to die of thirst, and then suddenly, like a flash, number nine comes back and delivers.
It's true. He was like the camel that led us to water or some sort of, to pick up with your Oasis metaphor. I'm pretty happy. I'm satisfied. We'll talk about some of the reasons why the win was satisfying. But I think that one of the things that has to be said right at the top is that not only did the Cowboys win, but the other two NFC East teams that were playing this weekend got waxed.
Yes.
The Eagles got crushed by Tampa Bay, which was very satisfying. The Redskins also got crushed by next week's opponent, the Carolina Panthers, who look awfully good. The weekend went really as well as we could expect. The Cowboys are now only one game behind Washington and Philadelphia and two games behind the idle Giants. So, after seven in a row, I think a lot of us feel like on some level it's foolish to continue to hope for some kind of division championship. But the truth of the matter is it's right there in front of them.
I mean, the interesting thing is that now it's not even just a case of checking the Cowboys score. It's like with the state of the season and the way it is, it's like you got to check the scores of the NFC East games as well to kind of figure out exactly, how happy you should be with the victory, right? It's not just enough anymore. I mean, the Cowboys need to focus on winning, but as a fan, it's not just enough for them to win anymore. We got to hope for the other teams, the other East teams to lose as well.
Not only that, but I found myself spending about 15, 20 minutes yesterday looking at the division, not even the division records, because they're actually all comparable. All three teams are 2-2 in the division. The Redskins are 1-1. But with the conference records. And so I'm actually trying to look at conference wins and conference losses and try to figure out if so-and-so loses to so-and-so. Because it threatens to get very, very complicated.
Yeah, it sure will. I mean, it always does at the end of the season. But you can already tell with this level of murkiness now, it's going to be, there could be going down to third, fourth tiebreakers by the time we get down to the nitty-gritty of playoff time.
I think that's very likely.
Yeah.
Very likely.
Well, what do we got in the show today?
I'm glad you asked, my friend. We're going to have Thomas Duck, also known as the Duckman, in to talk with us about the Dolphins game and, of course, the return of Romo. And then we'll chat with a guy named Brian Beversluis from Cat Scratch Reader, which is the SB Nation Carolina Panthers site. Why do all the other sites have cooler names than us?
I mean, they rely on the puns so well, and I think we just didn't take full advantage of ours.
As a connoisseur of puns, I think you have to appreciate just about every opposing blog that we invite in.
It's amazing.
Anyway, we'll talk with Brian about the Cowboys Thanksgiving opponent, who happened to sport the NFC's best record, and in fact are tied for the NFL's best record, the 10-0 Carolina Panthers. But listen, before we do that, let's chat a little bit about the Cowboys-Dolphins. So let me actually just open up with a couple of observations, and then I'll ask you what you thought. I think that in many respects, and I don't think I'm the only one who noticed this. I think in many respects, this felt very much like a 2014 game, and particularly the kind of 2014 game that they played during that early season win streak before Romo was really all the way back to full health. So, there's that six-game win streak between the Tennessee game in Game 2 and, I guess, the New York Giants game in Game 7, when they relied on the run game and they relied on a defense that made big plays, et cetera, to pull out win after win. But there are several things that characterize those wins that I saw again crop up yesterday. And it made me very happy because, of course, that team was a lot of fun to watch. So the first of those is the plays run. The Cowboys ran 68 offensive plays and the Dolphins ran 41. 60 is the NFL average. So to hold the opposition to 41 offensive plays, it does all the things we've been talking about the last couple of years in terms of resting the defense. And as you might expect from this disparity, the time of possession was 38 minutes and 50 seconds for the Cowboys, a mere 21 minutes and 10 seconds for the Dolphins, an almost 2-1 advantage. The Cowboys ran for 166 yards. And McFadden went 29 for 129. The dude did some work. I don't know if you noticed this. There was a little brief shot of him at the end when he was around his like 27th, 28th carry. And he was covered in dirt. He was all sweaty and wet and everything. And I just looked at him. I was like, there's a workhorse. There's a workhorse who had himself a day, you know? He had himself a day. And the other thing that I found really, really pleasing was the final drive. The final drive after the sort of questionable call on the part of the Dolphins to punt on 4th and 5, I think they're around their own 45. The Cowboys took over and cranked out a 12-play drive, 8 runs by Darren McFadden, generated 4 first downs, and ran all but about a minute off the clock, and extinguished any hope that the Dolphins might have of mounting a comeback. Excuse me. And did so while the Dolphins' very, very strong defensive line knew they were going to run the ball, and yet they were able to run the ball anyway. I thought that was pretty awesome. And then I think the last thing to remark upon is the disparity in third down conversions. Much like they did last year, Dallas was hovering around 50% most of last year. Yesterday they were at even 50%, 7 out of 14, and Miami was only 1 out of 10. And the one conversion they had was actually the touchdown pass, the second touchdown. So other than that, they were 0 for 9. And amazingly, they faced third down, an average third down distance of 12.7 yards. And they faced third downs of like 10, 11, 17, 22, and 25 yards. So the Cowboys defense and some timely Miami penalties continue to put the Dolphins in these, you know, really, really untenable third down situations, and the Cowboys took advantage. So that was – those are all things that to me felt like I was watching the 2014 Cowboys again. So tell me, what are your takeaways from the game?
Well, you and I have discussed this phenomenon before, and I've had a hard time kind of quantifying it before as well. And I think the last the 2014 season is a good kind of segue to introduce kind of this – a phenomenon. I don't really know what to call it, but you know, I had noticed that there have been a lot of times in previous seasons, more in 2012 and 2013, where the team seemed to have moments where each unit would play well, but they wouldn't play well together. You know, they didn't seem to be picking up where the other one left off, or playing in sync, or one would just play detrimentally bad and then the other one would play really great. And it seemed like even in wins at times, you know, especially the 2013 season, it seemed like, well, it was either our offense or our defense played well. Which one? You know, it was rarely a case where both units were in sync and both were playing really well. And then in 2014, it kind of changed because the offense and the defense started feeding each other. You know, the idea that the run game would give the rest, and then the points would give the defense the opportunity to come out and play with their ears pinned back and go attack, and not have to worry about, you know, making mistakes as much, because they've got some, you know, a little bit of breathing room because they have Tony Romo, and then also they're fresh because they've been off the field because the offense has been running the ball. You know, and that kind of phenomenon. Not only, you know, were the units playing together, they were feeding each other, which is a brilliant thing. And then, you know, obviously, even the first two games, it felt like when Tony was healthy, this team didn't seem like all the units were playing together and playing at a high level. And it seems like this is the first game, in at least since 2014, and even then, it felt a little different, where all three units seem to be playing together as a team. You know, like there was points where, you know, the offense did make some mistakes, and the defense was able to take advantage. I mean, I think the key thing of the first thing that pops my mind is the Romo interception on that after the long drive, right? Where he's, you know, he makes a momentary lapse of judgment where he probably just needs to throw that ball away. And again, a lot of this is just rust on his point, not being, and he talked about it too. It's just not being completely in tune with situational football at that speed. And you know, it was an ill-advised throw into the end zone. You know, he thought that Dez would maybe make a better play at it, but Brent Grimes came up with the ball and then ran it out to about, I think it was the 12 or the 13. So, and then, you know, they run, I think, two running plays, and on third down, they're trying to run a crossing route, and you know, McClain is doing that fake A-gap sugaring and breaks off, sees sees the quarterback's eyes the entire way, and then breaks on the slant, picks it off, and runs it into for a touchdown. You know, and it's that kind of thing where it's like, okay, the offense dropped the ball, but the defense picked up the slack and then finished the drive for them. You know, and things like that. And I know it seems like that kind of thing is difficult to quantify, but it seems like whenever the offense was struggling in the game and couldn't get first downs, the defense stood up at that moment and helped them get the ball back. And that kind of reliance of, hey, you know what, guys, you didn't get it, we'll take it from here, as opposed to times when, you know, we've seen Castle or Whedon flounder, and then suddenly it gets compounded by the defense breaking wide open and having huge runs and touchdowns and then just kind of compiling. And, you know, I just think that that's one of the reasons that we were able to keep a lead the entire game, is that at the moments it felt like the offense was starting to struggle or not playing as well, that's when the defense would come through and start making a play or cause a three and out or keep them to long distances. You know, and I think you can't say enough about how well each unit played. I mean, obviously the offensive side is more noticeable because we have been, you know, in the desert for so long. So anything that looks like water looks amazing, to continue the metaphor. Mm-hmm. But I think what's even more impressive is, you know, you quoted all those with, you know, Miami was 1 of 10 on third downs. And that was, you know, the reason the game felt closer is because Miami had an incredible field position advantage for most of the game. I mean, right. it was unbelievable how good their field position was and how terrible the Cowboys' field position was. And ultimately, the reason that the Cowboys were able to neutralize that and even, you know, still win handedly because of that was because of how their defense was able to shut the Miami offense down. They had some early success running the ball with Lamar Miller, but then the offense kind of, you know, after a couple of drives, kind of took that opportunity out of their hands. I think, you know, the Dolphins wanted to continue running the ball, and I think they tried to continue it on their second drive, but because of the defensive performance, the defensive ability to get them off the field, and then in turn the offense's ability to take advantage and score, it took Miami out of their game plan and I think kind of had the Miami offense on the heels for the rest of the game.
Yeah, the Dolphins, and this brings up the notion of the idea of the Dolphins penalties again, because I think that they had a lot of offensive penalties that put them in untenable down and distances and made them one-dimensional. So the Cowboys defense, I think, had a very large part to play in that, but I think the Dolphins also had some self-inflicted damage that I, you know, very happily for us, eliminated the running game from being really a factor, because, as you said, early on, like, their first couple of runs were like for 16 and 9 yards, and it looked like they were going to have a pretty good day running the ball between the tackles. And, you know, I think ultimately Lamar Miller only touched the ball something like 7 times in the game.
I'll just want to throw this in, too, since we talked about it. Jeff Triplett just needs to be out of the league. I mean, yeah. We won the game, and I'm still furious about how terrible that game was called. And we seen a couple of terrible officiating crews, but Triplett is, I mean, he shouldn't be reffing a high school game. It's ridiculous how bad that crew is. I just wanted to throw that part in. So, okay, well, do you have anything else on that, or do you want to go and cover?
I actually have a couple of things I want to sort of point out. So one thing to sort of wrap up what you were saying earlier, you know, if we use a kind of to shift from the desert metaphor to the biological metaphor, it seems like before that the Cowboys have been 3 one-celled organisms.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
And on Sunday they were a 3-celled organism. It was like one organism with different entities, but all sort of working together and sending signals to each other and feeling what the other ones were doing. And, you know, I don't know how long it's going to last. I don't know if that's just a one game thing. I don't know if that's because the Dolphins are really bad. I don't know if that's because Romo's back. Who knows? But it was really great to see. And I think it makes me very excited for what's on the horizon. And so speaking of the way in which the, you know, the team operated, I think there were a couple of really interesting turning points in different directions. And one, of course, is, you know, this has been talked about a lot, but I think it sure reminded us of what we didn't have for a long time, which was that 2nd and 27 on, I believe, their second – it was their first touchdown drive.
It was their first offensive touchdown.
Yeah. So, you know, a couple of offensive penalties on the Cowboys' offensive tackles get them into a 2nd and 27. And I think – I mean, you tell me if you agree with me or not, but I feel pretty certain that if Kassler or Wiedner are under center, that they run the ball twice and punt it. Because it was, you know, it was right at the 2-minute warning they were facing this second and 27. I think they try to punt it and just hope the defense holds Miami, you know, out of the end zone. And instead, you know, Romo's there. And so the first, they get a deep in to Terrence Williams for 17. And then in the next play, it looks like it's a play they'd kind of set up with some other stuff, hit him in the corner of the end zone for the touchdown. And that just, I was like, oh, that's it. Romo's back. That's the stuff we haven't been seeing. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was really great. You know, the sort of negative side of all of the entire team operating in unison, and this is in some ways what you were talking about earlier, which is that when one thing goes bad, everything goes bad. You know, that if it hadn't been such a kind of clear victory, that Dez celebration penalty would have been an absolute killer, because the Cowboys had complete command. It looked like in the second half they were gonna be facing a very wet and sloppy field, because people were saying there were, you know, or before the game they were saying there was 100% chance of rain in the second half, and I don't know if I saw any, mm-hmm. but it looked like in the second half it was gonna be, you know, it's gonna pour again and really be a slop fest, and so a 14-0 lead in a slop fest with a team like the Dolphins felt like it would be pretty secure. And then that celebration penalty just really switched the momentum. And then the weird I still don't know what happened on that squib kick, because the telecast kind of cut away from Bailey to some guy picking it up. But clearly it was a field position reversal because of the penalty. And then, you know, one really, really beautiful pass over Byron Jones to Landry gets them down in striking range, and they end up getting the touchdown to make it 14-7. As I said earlier, I think that choice by Dan Campbell not to go for it on 4th and 5, which basically gave the Cowboys the ball for their final drive of the game, was a really huge decision. I think in retrospect, you know, he's probably getting grilled and raked over the coals for that choice right now on the Miami Sports Talk Radio. But I think that in retrospect, he'll regret having made that choice. But there's another thing that happened on the at the beginning of that final drive. It was, I think, what was it? It was, I guess it was 3rd and 9, and they sack Romo. I'm trying to think of exactly how this worked, but Miami declined the penalty at the beginning of the final drive, and which allowed McFadden to get a first down. And if they had taken the penalty, it would have been like, I think, 2nd and 19. But instead, they declined the penalty, and so it's 3rd and 14, and he gets the 15 yards on that drop play, and that allows that drive to happen. So, you know, even in a game that was a comfortable double-digit win, there are so many times when the slightest little choice, you know, officials call, touch of the ball, et cetera, can swing a game completely. And so, you know, the Cowboys are going to have to get better if they're going to, you know, escape the vagaries of Lady Luck. I think that in many respects, after 7 games away, she came back and, you know, bestowed some of her graces upon them yesterday. But I'm not sure that, you know, I think that they were the beneficiaries in many ways of some lucky breaks, but you know, that aside, they took advantage of those, and that's what a good team has to do, and I was pleased to see that.
You know, I'm starting less and less to believe in that aspect of luck, and I think this kind of feeds perfectly into my last point, which is obviously the big story of all of this is the return of Romo, right? So, you know, I think what Romo provides for you when he's on the field, a lot of different things, obviously technical, you know, athletically, there's a lot of things, but what Romo provides to his team is hope no matter what. I think, you know, the reason that Miami declining that penalty was a bad idea is because you gave Romo another chance, no matter what the distance was, right, to get another first down. And he got it. And he does that consistently is that, you know, and I think it kind of goes back to what you were just talking about with the strategy of what that would have been like with 2nd and 27 with Castle or Whedon, right? It's like I remember that play when it happened. I was thinking, we'll probably get this. Like I remember thinking Romo will get something like 15 or 20 yards on 2nd down, and then it'll make it a manageable 3rd down, and then we'll see what happens on 3rd down. And it's so crazy to me. I had forgotten that feeling. You know, that feeling of just like Romo could fix this. Like, mm-hmm. like that moment. And I think you have to go back to, you know, where we were as a fandom and where the team was, like, you know, before the game starts, you know, opening of the game, the rain's pouring down. We've got a still injured number one wide receiver who's not playing 100%. We got a guy who's coming off a collarbone injury who's taking his first drive on his own 10-yard line, if I'm not mistaken, while there's a monsoon going on.
Yeah.
You have to tell me, but I'm pretty sure that they ran for like 2 yards or something like that and then had two penalties. And Romo's, you know, suddenly Romo's running around in a hurricane in his own end zone while one of the best defensive lines of football is chasing him down. And there was this moment, right, where it could have gone either way. Where it could have been Romo being dragged down by Vernon, who was right there in the end zone, and starting the whole game off with a sack and just kind of continuing that avalanche of bad voodoo or mojo or momentum or whatever you want to call that, you know, unnamed entity that had been weighing on us for the last 2 months, right? And he slips the ball into his left hand and pushes it out of the end zone and gets it into somehow, you know, chest passes it into his waiting running back who doesn't get the first down but gets 9 yards when it was 3rd and 10 from the inside of his end zone. And Jerry pointed it out, you know, after the game, is like when he saw that, it gave him hope. And it didn't for me at first, but what it was that realization that Romo was back and that he wasn't going to just give in to that. And I think that's what it was, is that the whole beginning of the game was Romo turning the tide against all that, you know, like Romo kind of pushing back against all the crap. I mean, we still were making bad mistakes early on. It still didn't look like we were completely, you know, in sync. It just took a while for him to kind of work through that. And then as you were watching it, you saw the team starting to turn it over. And you started to see the momentum change and the shift. And then suddenly, you know, McClain gets an interception for a touchdown. We're on the board. We're moving the ball down the field. Suddenly we can run the ball against a good team. And suddenly, you know, that momentum, which had been working against us, you know, it even felt like at times when we were doing well, you know, those few weeks when we were losing, like there were times when we were playing well, but then you know, something would happen and momentum would crush us again and we would sink back down. But it just seemed like that whole game was like this cathartic, like, you know, removal of that. And it's all about Romo. It's all about Romo giving this team the belief that they're good enough to keep going and keep doing this. And his play perfectly supports the Garrett mantra of, all right, we still then don't worry about that play. Move on to the next one, because Romo gives you that hope. No matter what you're facing that next play, Romo gives you the chance for that play to be successful.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, any top three quarterback does, and so, you know, it was really great to have your top three quarterback back. You know,
yeah.
I think, you know, ultimately, what a top three quarterback gives you is it gives you a certain amount of games every year where you're above the vagaries of fate. I mean, I don't believe in like football gods or anything like that, no. But I think that, you know, when you're the type of team that continues to play close games, there are weird things that are going to happen that are going to decide the game. And ultimately what you want the game to be decided by is just your superiority. And there's a lot of NFL games that are not decided by superiority. They're decided by fluky stuff. They're, you know, decided by, calls are decided by fumbles or decided by a toe that goes out of bounds, you know, little tiny things. And so, you know, when you have your number one signal caller back, he's capable of giving you enough of a lead where that kind of stuff isn't going to hurt you, you know?
Yeah.
Because honestly, if they play 10 games that are decided by 3 points or more, Romo's not going to win 10 of them. He might win 5 or 6, you know, but you know, and so that's good. But I think that the main thing he does is when the whole team is working as a unit, as they were on Sunday, is that you banish Lady Luck from the stadium, and that's really good.
And I started to think that maybe, he has more of a hand in that all the teams working as a unit together than maybe we've even let on. You know, I think maybe that belief in the offensive game plan by the defensive players is that much more strengthened by the fact by seeing number nine as the guy taking the snaps. You know, I there's something there that I think is, you know, it's clear that there's some sort of voodoo or some kind of thing that's happening behind the scenes. That's the reason that this team is 0-7 without him and 3-0 with him. And it's not just because he's a really great quarterback. You know, I think there's a confidence that shows up when he's on the field for both sides of the ball.
No question.
All right. Well, I think this was a good spot for us to bring in the Duckman for a conversation about all this. So before we do that, I want to make sure we plug Blogging the Boys. Bloggingtheboys.com is your one-stop shop for all your Cowboys needs. Make sure you hit them up in this short week for all information on injuries, updates, everything you need to know about the Cowboys leading into Thanksgiving. Bloggingtheboys.com has got it. Follow them on Facebook, Blogging the Boys, and on Twitter, @BloggingTheBoys.
Here comes the sun, I say it's all right.
Ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together and help me welcome the great Thomas Duck, also known as the Duck Man, into the studio. Thomas, welcome.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for having me on, guys. It's a privilege to be here with you.
The Duck Man is a lifelong fan of the NFL and, of course, the Dallas Cowboys, who spent most of his adult life in the sports broadcasting mecca of Syracuse, New York, but now sets up shop in beautiful Hawaii on the Big Island. The Duckman hosts his own weekly internet radio show entitled Assignment Football, and I must confess I've been lucky enough to be both a guest and a fill-in co-host on the show. And he's also a staff writer at the Landry Hat and a contributing writer for Cover32.com. So we thought he'd be a great guy to come in and chat about the return of Romo and the Cowboys' win in Miami. So, but before we get to Sunday's action, Duckman, I'd like to pick your brain a little bit about the 2015 season. So, as we have talked about in the past, you've been writing a weekly preview piece over at Cover32.com entitled Five Reasons the Cowboys Will Beat, Insert the Opponent. And for 7 weeks now, you have been dead wrong.
Yes, I have.
So you are, and if you want to actually total this up, you're 0-35 in the last 7 weeks. Although now, this week, you were right. At any rate, though. No one saw. I don't think anybody could have seen that we'd go 0-7 back on September 20th when Romo first got hurt. I think most of us, you know, figured that the Cowboys would surely pull out two or three wins over that stretch. So what, in your estimation, has caused this prolonged seven-game skid?
Well, I hope it's not me and my my five reasons. But if you read my story this past week, my five reasons why they were going to win this week was they were all Tony Romo. But I'll tell you what, I think it's a number of things. It's more than just Tony Romo missing, although that's a huge part of it, obviously. Any team in the NFL loses their starting quarterback, and the quality of play is going to go down. Now, some teams, for whatever reason, are able to kind of sustain a little bit while their starter is out, i.e. the Pittsburgh Steelers earlier this year, missing a few games with Ben Roethlisberger, but they were able to kind of hold the fort. The Cowboys weren't able to do that. They also, I mean, I think a big part of it was the fact that they missed Dez. Dez missed, five games as well. That's a huge loss when you're losing your number one offensive weapon and your starting quarterback. That's tough. And because of that, the offense was unable to sustain drives. A lot of three and outs, especially in the second half. They weren't able to run the ball as well without the threat of Romo and Dez on the field. And I think that put a lot of pressure on the defense, caused the defense to get exposed in a lot of games, especially in the second half, having to stay on the field all the time. But, you know, make no mistake, Romo is the kind of guy who makes other guys better. He's that type of player for the Cowboys. When he's on the field, he elevates the play of the guys around him. Look no further than today's game when you saw Escobar get involved in the offense for the first time in 2 months. Terrence Williams was a huge part of this game. 79 yards, a touchdown catch, something he hasn't done basically since Romo went out, and was able to just kind of really get that rhythm right back with Romo. And I think that's really the reason for the 0-7 certainly was a bunch of factors just kind of caving in on the Cowboys all at one time, and just not being able to get the quality of play out of the quarterbacks that they would like to have got.
All right, so let's talk about the boys-Fins game. You also pin a regular column over at the Landry Hat in which you ask what went right, what went wrong in that week's game. So in the spirit of that column, allow me to ask what went right for the Cowboys against Miami, and if you're handing out game balls, who added a pigskin to their trophy case?
Okay, well, I think for sure, I've already written the story, so this kind of is good. So that's good. My first reason really was the defense. I think the defense won this game for the Cowboys. I think they were kind of put in a bad situation on that first touchdown. I didn't like that taunting penalty. I thought that was pretty much a stretch on a personal foul from Dez and Williams. But if you look at what the defense did today, they held the Miami Dolphins to 9 total first downs in the game. And they also held them to 1 for 10 on third downs. And they also kept them to under 210 yards. They really controlled the game for long, long stretches. I mean, you had two touchdown drives, one on each side of the half, kind of after the three and after the first drive for the Cowboys, the Dolphins were able to come back down and get back right back on the board to tie up the game at 14. But for almost the entire rest of the game, the Cowboys defense was able to control the Dolphins' running game. They were able to stop the passing game for the most part. I thought Byron Jones was really great in this game. Even the one pass that Landry caught behind him, he was in great position. So I thought Byron Jones was great. Another reason, the running game, again, this is resurgent. It's been there kind of the last month or so, with the exception of maybe one or two games. McFadden has really kind of found his way through the playbook, I guess. I mean, today he was 29 carries for 129 yards. And I think the other big difference was that they were able to pick up Robert Turbin this week, and they were able to get him in the game, and he was able to give them that secondary back to spell McFadden. And he had 35 yards on 7 carries. And the one thing I will say is that Landon, you know, Lyle Collins was awesome in this game, pulling and filling the hole. I kind of wrote it. He was filling the hole like a Mack truck motoring down the highway. He looked great. And I guess my last thing that went right was Romo Magic. And a couple plays come to mind. One of them, it doesn't end up in a first down or anything like that. The 3rd and 10 in the first quarter from their own 3.5 in the driving rainstorm, right? The protection breaks down. Romo's in the end zone. If that's Whedon or that's Castle, that's probably a safety, but Romo somehow left hands the ball to McFadden to get his punter some room to punt the ball away. That's a huge difference in why the Cowboys lost games when he wasn't there, and why they win games when he is there. Also, another one, the 2nd and 13 from the 50 to Devin Street, where he rolls out, stumbles to his left, almost falls down, looks up, finds Devin, hits him for the first down. It's just stuff like that that Romo does, that magician act that he has that other guys don't do. So to answer your question, my game balls are going to go to Rolando McClain, because I think he played a great game. Not a ton of tackles, but that interception return for a touchdown really sparked the Cowboys early. And then also Darren McFadden, huge performance, 129 yards on 29 carries, 4.4 yards a carry. And then, of course, Romo. He wasn't perfect, but he certainly was everything the Cowboys needed today.
Yeah, absolutely. I love the plays that you picked out in terms of, you know, highlighting Romo's performance. And the other one that Lan and I were talking about was, you know, there was a moment there on the touchdown drive that the Cowboys engineered right before the half where they had a 2nd and 27. And honestly, if that's Castle or Whedon, they're just going to run the ball twice into the line and hope for a field goal or punt the ball away. But with Romo in there, you know, they were able to sort of navigate that and massage it. So, they, you know, they had a nice little pass, you know, got it in more manageable third down. And then he had the long pass to in the end zone to Williams to get the touchdown. So, yeah, it was really great. It was really great to see him back. Let's flip side, which is potentially the downside. So what went wrong on Sunday? You know, what players or position groups or even units, when I by that I mean like the offensive unit, defensive unit, special teams, failed to pull their weight?
Well, for the first time in a long time, it was kind of actually difficult to come up with what went wrong. Because in all, I think it was a pretty well-played game. I really like what the defense did, as I've already mentioned. I think you could probably look at Romo with maybe a little bit of rust, whatever it was. Couple of throws that were ill-advised that ended up in interceptions. The first interception, which really kind of killed a drive that looked like it was going to get points. That's one where you think if he's kind of in the rhythm of the season, maybe is able to make that decision quicker and doesn't float that ball out there. And the second one looks like it was just kind of, he just didn't have the right kind of touch where he overthrew Turbin, and that one ended up being picked as well. So I think there's a little bit of Romo. He's kind of nitpicking there. Pass protection, I think, was really bad. And to say that, I think the Dolphins have a really good defensive front. They weren't really great under Joe Philbin, but since Dan Campbell's taken over, they've really kind of turned the corner. They've got 19 sacks. They had 19 sacks in the five games before this game, and I can't remember. I think they had two sacks today. But the pass protection, the offensive line was kind of under siege. Olivier Vernon was a beast out there, and Ndamukong Suh was kind of being a Ndamukong Suh. So all in all, I think the pass protection has to get a little bit better. And penalties on the offensive line, I think that has a lot to do with the same kind of thing, because a lot of it was holding, false starts on Doug Free. Too many penalties today, 10 penalties on the Cowboys for 79 yards. They've got to clean that kind of stuff up. But again, compared to the stuff that I've had to write about what went wrong over the last seven games prior to this one, it was a little bit harder to come up with stuff.
Okay, we have delayed this as long as we can. Sunday marked the much-anticipated return of Tony Romo. Taking the opponent, the pressure-packed situation, the rain coming down, I mean, just the whole setup, it just everything going against them for this, you know, very much-anticipated return. How do you feel that number nine fared?
Like a god. he comes off 2 months, and he looked every bit as good as he usually does. Like I said, a little bit of rust here and there, but really you're just nitpicking at that. I don't know if the guy feels pressure at all, to be honest with you, because he's out there, he's smiling, he's having a good time. He's, you know, like I said, he's rolling out when he's under pressure, stumbling, finding a guy down the field. Like you said, converting a second and 27 into a spectacular touchdown throw to Terrence Williams. He just was amazing. Absolutely amazing. And, you know, the Miami defense is, like I said, they're as good as any defense out there, talent-wise. They didn't have Cameron Wake today, but for the mass, I guess, the sum of their parts is very, very good, and they've played much better since Dan Campbell took over there. So I was just really impressed with what Romo was able to do. You know, two touchdowns. Yeah, he threw the two interceptions. The numbers weren't really like vintage Romo, but he did enough to get the win, and comfortably, by the way, 10 points, and it was really, really never in doubt from about 7 or 8 minutes left in the fourth quarter on. It was – that game was over. So Romo was amazing today.
So you know, luckily, I don't know how much other football you were watching while you were watching the Cowboys game, but I was very pleased to see that the rest of the NFC East capitulated today and were blown out by various NFC South teams. So the Cowboys, as we know, are now 3-7, which is only a game behind Washington and Philadelphia, and two games behind the Giants, who were idle today and who have a very tough upcoming schedule, probably the hardest of the NFC East teams. So I'm going to ask you, you know, all kinds of horrible premature questions here. What do you think about Dallas's chances going forward? Maybe we should put it this way. Here we are at this crossroads. So the question is, what bus are you waiting for? Are you waiting for the Playoff Express, or are you waiting for the Draft Street Local?
Well, I mean, I guess at this point, I'm sitting here hoping for the Playoff Express. Okay, but if the Playoff Express does not show up, I'll be happy to get on the Draft Street Local. But I'll tell you this. It's because you look at it this way. If the Cowboys – I think 7-9 is possibly good enough to win this division, okay? But I don't know that the Cowboys – you know, if they lose three more games, it's all but over. So, but 6-10 probably get you a mid-round draft pick. And for the Cowboys, that fits right into their mold of what they're looking for next year. D-tackle, running back, those kinds of things. So that's okay. But I think this division is still out there for the Cowboys to win. I think if they can go 5-1 over their last six games and end up at 8-8, they got a real shot of being the division champion and making it to the playoffs and hosting a playoff game. So next week is huge. I mean, I should say Thanksgiving. this next game is huge. If they're able to somehow derail the Panthers, get this win, then all bets are off. The Cowboys are right back in this thing, especially if Washington were to turn around and beat the Giants at home on the following Sunday, because the Cowboys would then be only one game out at first place with five to play.
So I'm assuming then that at least right now, you'll probably get on the Playoff Express, but you might ask the bus driver for a transfer just in case.
Just in case, yes. I'll have that in my pocket.
So I guess my question then is, you get on the Playoff Express, the door opens, you step up, you take a look, who's driving that bus?
Well, there's only one guy driving that bus, and it's Tony Romo. I mean, he's proven it. This team goes nowhere without him. He is the bus driver. He is the guy that's going to take them wherever this team's going to go. If there anything that's good that's going to happen to this football team, it's going to happen because Tony Romo took them there. 3-0 with him, 0-7 without him. It's just you don't need much more proof than that. He's got to be the guy that gets it done. But I think he can get it done in a way that he lifts the other players, and he doesn't have to do everything by himself, but he is the type of player, like I said before, who makes the other guys better. So, but he's got to be the bus driver.
All right, guys, make sure that you follow Thomas with all his work over at the Landry Hat and on cover32.com. And he's a great Twitter follow. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at Duckman for real. That's at DUCKMAN for the number 4 REAL. Thomas, please come back and join us again, will you?
Anytime, guys. It was an absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, man. It was great having you on. Thanks so much.
Good to talk to you.
Well, great stuff there from Duckman. But at the same time, any analysis coming after a win feels like it's probably pretty great to get at this point.
I couldn't agree more. That's exactly what I was thinking. And speaking of wins, actually, our upcoming opponent has 10 of them and no losses. So I tell you what. Let's bring in Brian to talk about the undefeated NFC front-running Carolina Panthers.
Like to welcome in Brian Beversluis from Cat Scratch Reaver. Brian, welcome.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me on.
We appreciate you joining us. Brian is an amateur film scout / journalist who is trying to make his way into the business. Anybody know a film producer? Give Brian his number. More pertinent to our purposes here, he has been a staff writer at Cat Scratch Reader, SB Nation's Carolina Panther site, since 2012. In this time there, he has written a wide variety of posts, but specializes in roster analysis and opponent previews. With those strengths, we thought Brian would be a terrific candidate to invite into the chat for the 2015 Panthers. And Brian, we'd like to start with the Ron Rivera administration, which is now in its fifth year in Carolina. By all accounts, it's been a pretty great success. Barring collapse, the Panthers will win their third consecutive division crown this season. To put that in perspective, last year they were the first NFC South team to win back-to-back titles since the NFL went to the four-division format in 2002. And under Rivera, the team has achieved what very few franchises can accomplish, sustained success. So what do you attribute to this?
Well, obviously there's a lot that's made out of the whole Riverboat Ron persona that he has recently become. Really what it comes down to is anybody who watched the Carolina Panthers back when John Fox was the head coach, there was a lot of very conservative play calling. You put a lot of your faith on defense. The offense just needed to do just enough to win the game. And I think Ron Rivera finally figured out about 2.5 years through that wasn't going to cut it in this day and age, this NFL. He started going for it on fourth down, started trying to get the ball in the end zone more. Even if the Panthers were up by quite a bit on an opponent, they would continue to try and put points on. And this year, he's really putting into high gear as far as just once you've got the opponent beat, you start twisting the knife, keep putting the points up, got to go for the kill shot. He's learned that you can't leave it on the defense. Like, the Panthers have a great defense, don't get me wrong, but if you can take it out of their hands and not force the defense to make a play to win the game, you start to see a lot of success because this is a very offensive NFL nowadays.
Mm-hmm. So you were just talking about the kill shot, and you know, I was watching a little bit of the Panthers and Redskins games on Sunday, and so I'd like to actually talk about that game because it seemed like you definitely, you know, what you're just talking about, they put into action. So after, you know, trading early touchdowns with Washington for a while, Carolina seemingly woke up, flexed their muscles, and dispatched the Redskins with seeming ease in a what proved to be a runaway, I think, 44-16 win. Was that right? So I guess my question for you
is, correct.
What led to the victory, and was this win as easy as the score suggests?
Well, really what it boiled down to, the Panthers came out on Sunday, and they went off on offense to begin. They scored their first two possessions, both touchdowns to their running backs off of checkdowns. The offense was rolling, similar to last week. Cam Newton had a very, very good passing game last week. The Redskins really stayed in it in the beginning because of two big plays, a big pass to DeSean Jackson and a long kick return by Andre Roberts. After that, the Redskins really didn't do a whole lot. I mean, obviously, after the fourth quarter, looking at the score, you see the Redskins only scored 2 points, where the Panthers continued to put up more points. I believe that equates out to about 30 more points total. And the offense just kept rolling. And exactly what I was saying earlier, like the Panthers and Ron Rivera have been attacking as much as they can on offense. Just because a game might seem out of reach doesn't mean it is. And I think that the Panthers learned that lesson from the Colts and from the Eagles, who managed to pull it back in towards the end of the game. Today's game was a dominant effort on all cylinders. Aside from two big plays, the defense was able to sack Kirk Cousins about 5 times. The Redskins' offensive line has only averaged about just a little bit over 1 sack per game. The offense obviously last week put up a 40 burger on the Saints, and this week only put up 14 points in the first quarter and nothing after that. They rushed for just over 10 yards total over the course of the game. The Panthers just dominated in this game. It's not the score definitely reflects what kind of game it was.
So, definitely. As Cowboys fans, we are familiar with Sean McDermott from his time with the Eagles, where he cut his teeth under the legendary defensive coach Jim Johnson. The Panthers have been a top 10 unit every year he has been the coordinator, and currently lead the league in points allowed per possession. So what makes McDermott's unit so effective in his current iteration with the Panthers?
Well, the current iteration of the Panthers is so much better than past iterations simply because the secondary is actually competent. There's Josh Norman playing real well. We got Charles Peanut Tillman also starting opposite him. They got second-year player Bene Benwickery, who was a steal in the 5th round last year. They got Roman Harper, who's suddenly playing a lot better than he was ever since he came to Carolina. They got Kurt Coleman, who was a former Eagle, I'm sure you guys know, and he's been playing very well. He actually just today tied Josh Norman's team-leading interception total. Sean McDermott's philosophy on the front 7 is very much, you know, front 4 is the pass rush that the rest of the defense sits back. Pass rush is how the defense runs. They have to sack the quarterback. They have to cause pressure. It forces mistakes. It forces the quarterback to throw the ball early. Luke Kuechly and Thomas Davis are a really big part of this defense because I'm sure you guys saw plenty of times that double A-gap look with Luke Kuechly and Thomas Davis back when Jim Johnson ran that. They'll sometimes blitz out of that, but oftentimes they won't, and it causes a lot of problems for offensive coordinators because they really have to game plan for that. But ultimately what it boils down to is just that the pass rush is there, so the rest of the defense is clicking on all cylinders.
So you named a lot of great playmakers right there. Which one of those guys is most likely to give the Cowboys fans indigestion on Thanksgiving?
Well, I can probably give you two, honestly, because there's one that's pretty obvious. But Josh Norman would be the one, simply because when the Panthers played the Redskins this week, DeSean Jackson absolutely burned our fill-in nickel corner, who was actually a backup safety, for a touchdown. So the Panthers adjusted and put Josh Norman on DeSean Jackson. And he was pretty quiet the rest of the game. And that's been the story of the entire season. Josh Norman has been shutting down number 1 wide receiver. And if he's lining up on Dez, which I can almost guarantee to you that they're going to have him shadow Dez Bryant, that could be a tough one for Dez Bryant. And then the other one I'm going to mention is Kawan Short on the defensive line. He has been playing out of his freaking mind recently. He started off the season healing from an injury, but after he finally got himself back together, he's been killing it on the defensive line. He's an absolute force. And I guarantee that I have a lot of respect for the Dallas Cowboys offensive line, but he is going to cause at least a little bit of problems for that run game and that passing game.
So is Norman's from one of the sort of smaller Florida schools, is that right?
He's from Coastal Carolina University.
Coastal Carolina, that's right. That's right. I remember we have a friend of the blog who is he works in the league as a defensive backs coach and a defensive back scout, and he was high on Norman. We followed him in the draft and liked him a lot as a sort of late round guy because, you know, he has an NFL body, NFL toolkit, and I'm not particularly surprised at how well he's turned out, but I'm very jealous about the fact that you got a player of that caliber in the fifth round, because I like the kid a lot coming out. So I'll tell you what, let's focus on the other side of the ball for a second. The offensive coordinator there is Mike Shula, who coincidentally, I suppose, his brother Dave, way back when, was the Cowboys offensive coordinator in 1989 and 90 under Jimmy Johnson. So Shula came to Carolina, I think, the same year Cam Newton did in 2011, first as his quarterback coach, and then more recently he was promoted to the team's offensive coordinator. So what are Shula's core beliefs? How does he like to attack offenses? And I guess the one thing I'm really interested in is, what has he done to cater his system and his play calls to Cam Newton's strengths?
Well, before I get into that, I'll give you a little backstory. Rob Chudzinski, who eventually the second year that he was with, following his second year with Carolina, he went on to be the head coach for the Cleveland Browns, got fired a year later. Mm-hmm. He was a very, very evil genius type type offensive coordinator. He had a lot of very creative wrinkles to his offense, but basically the offense that he had in place was very read option based. It catered to Cam Newton's skills in college with the read option and the quarterback runs and the play action. And Mike Shula essentially took what was already there and kind of just formulated it to be what he thought would be successful. In his first 2 years as the offensive coordinator of Carolina, Canada's fans hated him because the plays he was running just were not working. Whether it was because of the fact that the offensive line was playing poorly or because the Panthers had a very young offense, like last year when Steve Smith was let go, we had tons of new faces around. Mike Shula's philosophy is finally starting to come to fruition this year, and he's made a few adjustments, but for the most part, it's still the same plan, which for him has always been ball control, which caters to the defensive mindset of Ron Rivera and Sean McDermott. Keep the ball as long as you can, run the ball down their throats, throw in some play-action wrinkles, throw in the pass, and his scheme is finally starting to come to fruition now that the offensive line for the Panthers is at least semi-competent. Cam Newton's throwing a lot better than he has over the course of his career. You can look at the raw stats and you won't be thoroughly impressed, but if you actually watch all the games, you can see Cam Newton has thrown a lot of passes right on the button. He's got a lot of touch passes, and finally it's starting to mesh. Mike Shula still runs a lot of design quarterback runs just to get Cam Newton into a rhythm. He still has the read option as a wrinkle, but he adjusted it because of Rob Chudzinski's failed attempt to use the read option as a base offense. There's still runs out of the gun, read option looks, read option fakes. But really what he's done is he's taken all the same runs that the Panthers offense would have normally run, but he will also run them out of the gun. And sometimes even run them the power, the sweep, the veer. They all can be run with Cam Newton as the running back. He's done a tremendous job of using Cam Newton as a power back, but not too much. Essentially, he's just running a ball control style offense to help keep the defense fresh, and it's working out real well for the Panthers this year. The no huddle definitely works as well. That's something that the Panthers have been doing a lot more recently. They give Cam Newton usually 3 to 4 different plays, and he generally about 70% of the time has control of what play is going to happen on offense. So he still has control. But Mike Shula will roll out what plays he feels would work or what plays would work out of that specific formation. But it gives Cam Newton time to read the defense and figure out what he thinks is best. And obviously, 10-0, clearly it's working.
Well, that actually provides me a segue to the next question I want to ask, which is, you know, assuming the Patriots win on Monday night, which, you know, they may not, but the likelihood is that they will. The Panthers, who are now 10-0, will be one of two undefeated teams, and they'll be tied for the Pats with the league's best record. So what I want you to do now for me is make a case that Carolina is the NFL's best team. Why, in your estimation, are they better than the Pats?
Well, really what it all boils down to is something that's obviously very easy to see, and that's that Cam Newton is one of those players that you have to have a game plan for, and he just forces you to play defense differently. If you remember back in 2013 when the Panthers played the Patriots on Monday Night Football, they beat the Patriots, sure. There was that controversial call with Rob Gronkowski, but obviously that was still, like, that one play was the difference between winning and possibly the Patriots tying the game or getting a chance at a two-point conversion to win the game. Bill Belichick didn't have clearly whatever his game plan was when they played each other was not effective because the Panthers still managed to score on offense. And this year, Cam Newton has matured a lot as a pocket passer, as a decision maker, as a leader. He's matured and he's improved a huge amount since his first year. He's the kind of player that just works at it day in and day out every single year because he wants to be a very good player. And he's had a negative rap for the celebrations and the smiling and the cockiness at times, but really he just enjoys playing the game, but he works extremely hard. He's managed to get this locker room around him. And for defenses, having a game plan for a quarterback who is as decisive as he is, has become as a quarterback is very difficult. He will stand in the pocket and take that hit now to get that throw out, something he didn't used to do back in his first few years. He also, if he sees the run, he'll take it. He won't hesitate either. Like, for a defense, that's so hard to game plan for. And the Patriots have a lot going for them on offense and a lot going for them on defense. But you take the Patriots defense, the Panthers defense, rattling it out, it could be a very low-scoring affair just because they're both very well-coached defenses. Cam Newton would be the X factor there. And so far, Bill Belichick hasn't showed that he can stop something like that.
All right, final question. Who wins on Sunday and why?
Well, I got to go with the Panthers just because of the 10-0 record, obviously. But really what it boils down to is just I'm not sure. I saw on Sunday that Romo did pretty well and beat the Dolphins and came and they looked pretty good. But this is going to be his second game back playing against a much better overall team than the Dolphins. And the Panthers are going to run the ball a lot. They're going to be smart with the football. They're going to try and force turnovers. Against the Redskins, they forced four fumbles for fumble recoveries. Like, they're going to be punching at that ball. That offense needs to be very much on point. The timing needs to be right there with everything. They need to be able to establish the run in order for them to have success. I just don't see that happening on all those facets for the Cowboys to win. But I think it will be a great game, and it'll be really interesting to see how the Greg Hardy Panthers offensive line dynamic works out. So it should be fun.
You know, it's one of those games where had Romo and Dez not been injured all year, the Cowboys probably go into this game somewhere north of 8-2, and everybody's calling this the game of the year. And so I don't know that the Cowboys are in the position right now to make this a kind of game of the year type of game, which is too bad because I think it really could be one of those things that were in the kind of contest that we would have been looking forward to for more than a month, maybe even. Listen, Brian, thank you so much for all the good information you've just given us. For those of you, gearing up for this Thanksgiving tilt, please follow Brian and his fine work over at Cat Scratch Reader. Follow him on Twitter. His Twitter handle is at Brian Beversluis. It's spelled at BrianBeversluis. Brian, come back and join us again sometime, will you, when the Cowboys and Panthers face off?
Sounds good to me. Had a great time with you guys.
Well, another great episode in the books, and it, of course, always feels greater after a win, like we said. But hopefully this is the start of the new season where we kind of march our way into the playoffs, and this is the first of many wins.
I couldn't agree more. It's been a long time since you and I had a chance to wrap up a podcast after a win, my friend. So let's clink our glasses over the airwaves here. And as we're sipping our champagne, look forward on the horizon to the rest of the season, because I think it's going to be really interesting.
I think so, too. And I hope everyone has a wonderful Thanksgiving and enjoys the game and enjoys family and everything. And we'll make sure to check in with you guys after the extended break from Thanksgiving. The extra few days will be nice for the team and for us. So before we want to go, we want to make sure we plug Blogging the Boys, which is your one-stop shop for all Cowboys information. Make sure through the short week and through the long week that follows that you're following bloggingtheboys.com for all your updates on injuries, info, everything Dallas Cowboys related. Follow them on Facebook as well, Blogging the Boys, and on Twitter, at Blogging the Boys. And until next week, guys, happy trails.
Happy trails, y'all.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until then. Who cares about the clouds when we're together? Happy trails to you.